Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, full-time law professor at Gonzaga University School of Law.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that values the art of movie making no matter the level of quality. Not that we intentionally seek out bad film, and of course we do have standards, but all three of us, each in our own way, appreciate the notion of the guilty pleasure. And while our opinions on what constitutes such a dubious kind of pleasure often differ, we just as often delight in arguing our respective cases. That's a roundabout way of introducing the two films we'll be discussing this week, the first being Doug Liman's loose remake of Rowdy Harrington's 1989 action thriller Roadhouse, and the second being Rose Glass's study in neo-noir intensity Love Lies Bleeding. Let's begin by heading to the Florida Keys. That's the supposed setting of this reworking of the 1989 film in which the late Patrick Swayze starred as a Buddha-type bouncer hired to tame the riffraff that liked to bust up a backwoods Missouri bar. If nothing else, the proximity to the ocean, which actually is the Dominican Republic standing in for the Florida Keys, makes what director Doug Liman made for Amazon Prime look more alluring than rural Missouri, even if the 1989 version actually was shot in California. And some viewers are likely to be impressed by the jacked-up physique of Jake Gyllenhaal, the actor stepping into the shoes of the character originated by Swayze. But though the production values are better and the script that Liman works from deviates in several aspects from the original, that doesn't mean that this new Roadhouse is anything more than the same cheesy story that masks its penchant for graphic violence with an obligatory message involving our protagonist's quest for redemption. One thing is for certain, though. Former Ultimate Fighting champion Conor McGregor, who plays Gyllenhaal's arch foe, makes one of the most impressive movie debuts you're ever likely to see.
Oh, well, I don't know if I'm clamoring for any more Conor McGregor performances.
You're going to get him, dude.
Oh, God, I don't want that. I could see him, you know, I mean, beyond the fact that he's just like a toxic person out in the real world, I don't think he's much of an actor. I've seen praise for his performance and I don't get it. I think he could maybe have a future as like a presence as like someone that fights John Wick in one of those movies because he is this imposing figure.
Exactly.
But I mean, they try and give him a character in this and I don't think it works. I know it's working for some people, but I didn't much care for that performance. But going back to Roadhouse, and I gotta say, if you take a drink of something every time they say Roadhouse in the movie, the new movie version of Roadhouse, you'll be blotto by
Nathan,
minute
20. Nathan, that's the name of the bar.
And you just have to keep saying it over and over again.
But well, people need to watch the show. How many times are we going to say Roadhouse?
Yeah,
and
no
take
kidding,
a drink?
No kidding. Yeah. My favorite thing about the new Roadhouse was rewatching the original Roadhouse, which I did just a few nights ago. And I think that movie walks, I'm going to quote Spinal Tap here, that movie walks the line between stupid and clever because it knows exactly what it is and it delivers on exactly what it is. And Swayze had that stoic confidence and you had Ben Gazzara as this crazy villain and it was just this down and dirty movie that
and
also had a
Sam Elliott.
Oh yeah, I would never forget Sam Elliott. It was a down and dirty movie, but it also had sort of a slickness to it. And I think this new Roadhouse is all slickness. I mean, none of it feels tangible. I mean, this doesn't feel like a real Roadhouse. It doesn't feel like a real small town. And maybe that seems like nitpicking a dumb movie, but it extends to my biggest criticism of it, which is, what do you want from a movie called Roadhouse? You want good fight scenes. And the fight scenes in this movie are terrible. They look like something out of a video game. They're slathered in all of this distracting CGI and these digitally altered camera movements. Doug Liman, the director, has said he wanted to, you know, get us in the headspace of someone who's getting clobbered about the head. But I just think it makes the whole thing look fake. There's never a sense that I'm not looking at either a stunt double or digitally altered versions of the people fighting. It just, that was all bad. And so every time it kept going into one of these action scenes, which is supposed to be the bread and butter of something like Roadhouse, I kept getting taken out of it because I thought, this just sucks. Like, I want to be having fun. I want to be laughing at the absurdity of what's going on screen. And so because they don't deliver on those fight scenes, we also get, you know, speedboat chases and explosions and all of that stuff. And I actually thought Jake Gyllenhaal was pretty good. I mean, he's not just doing a Patrick Swayze impersonation. It's a different kind of character. I do want to kind of talk about the character of Dalton as it's been reimagined, but I think he kind of glides through this in a way that does work. He sort of has this kind of smirking knowingness that I thought actually worked with the characters. So, yeah, I think if you're going to watch a movie called Roadhouse, why would you bother with this one? Go back and watch the Rowdy Harrington original. I mean, the guy's name was Rowdy Harrington. How could he not deliver something that was a true Roadhouse film? So, yeah, this was not my cup of tea.
This did not work. And it was, you're right. Why remake something like this? I mean, the original Roadhouse was a guilty pleasure movie.
Well, I don't believe in the concept of guilty pleasure.
Oh,
I am not guilty. Pleasures? I am not guilty about my pleasure of watching Roadhouse.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough.
You
I know.
You didn't
there
go to church enough
fans,
as a kid. Right?
That, well, that exactly. is true. Guilty is charged there.
And it just felt so artificially constructed, mm-hmm. you know? It was almost like a puzzle, like insert part A into part B.
Algorithmic.
And then as soon as the love interest appears, oh, gee, who's the love interest? I guess I
Who
know.
Who could she be related to in this
right.
story?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So I think that Dan is more enthused about this movie maybe than the two of us because why? It introduces a new character who's going to be a formidable foe for Dalton.
Oh, yeah. I can just see Roadhouse 2. You know, if it isn't in the works at the moment, it's obviously that I'm going to push back a lot about your feelings about Conor McGregor, Nathan, because I think he has ever bit as much screen charisma as The Rock does. And The Rock is another guy who comes, or John Cena.
No,
these guys.
No, no,
yeah,
no.
yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, and I'm also going to push back. I mean, I've seen a lot of fight scenes also. The fight scenes worked fine for me.
I don't know, for some reason, Conor McGregor in this film reminded me of a troll. And I can't get that out of my head. I mean, he...
Well, there's a new animated Lord of the Rings coming out, apparently,
oh,
so maybe
okay.
he'll be
well,
in that.
Maybe,
an orc.
Yeah, I guess.
No, he'll be a dwarf.
Oh, okay, I see, yeah.
No, I certainly don't think that this is a good movie. I didn't think the original was a good movie. But one of Mary Pat's favorite terms is when she talks about sports films, she calls them cheesy sports flicks. Cheese is exactly the right definition for both these movies. And on the level of cheese, you can't beat Rowdy Harrington's Roadhouse.
Yes.
You just cannot do it. But this is cheese.
It is a big slab of cheese.
This is cheese also made by a guy who is a much more skilled director, but who feels like he's slumming a bit.
Yeah.
So it's not
the
a good movie.
The skill isn't here,
it's,
I don't think.
It's not a good movie, but I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed okay. Gyllenhaal, and I certainly enjoyed Conor McGregor.
I want to go back to the fight scenes in the 2024 Roadhouse. Do you know what I'm talking about with that CGI alteration? That didn't bother you?
No.
It's one of these things where every time like someone gets punched in the face, the camera does this thing where it will like move, but
it almost
it's like
twitches
a, yeah,
in
it's
a
like
way.
A CGI effect. You see that a lot in like the Kingsman movies, like Matthew Vaughn, the director, likes doing that. Or it really just looked like they CGI'd Jake Gyllenhaal's face on someone else's body. And I know that Doug Liman, the director, who again has made some great action movies like mm-hmm. the Bourne film, the first Bourne
the original
film, Edge
film,
of Tomorrow, I think
yeah,
is a
yeah.
really good movie,
yeah,
Mr.
Yeah.
and Mrs. Smith. So this guy knows what he's doing, but he's been pushing back against the release of Roadhouse because he said MGM, which by the way, there's something really depressing to me as just a fan of the history of movies, seeing like MGM Amazon or Amazon MGM. It's just a sad state of affairs. But anyway, he was mad that this didn't get a theatrical release.
It should have gotten
went
a
right
theatrical
to
release.
Amazon Prime. And I do wonder if those digital effects, would they have looked less hokey on a big screen? I don't know. On my TV in my living room, they looked really hokey, and I thought they looked really bad.
Our TV is twice as big as yours, and it didn't look bad at all.
Well, my eyesight
yeah,
is
Yeah, I don't know if we can use Dan as the barometer here.
And it's not twice as big. Let's not go crazy here. And also, getting back to Dalton, the character, I noticed something interesting in comparing the two versions of Roadhouse, sort of highlighted a difference between movies then and now in terms of storytelling. The Dalton in the 1989 Roadhouse, the one played by Patrick Swayze, he blows into town. We get some sketchy details about his background, his philosophy. We discover that he's this Zen do-gooder who will also rip out a throat if he has to. And then that's really all we need to know. But the Dalton here, I think new movies almost feel the need to explain why characters yeah. are doing stuff. So he gets this dark backstory about this championship fight that yeah. went wrong and how he may have accidentally killed his friend. And I thought that it gives shades to this character, but does it really have any consequence at all? Does it really matter to the story? It just kind of clutters things up.
The one thing I liked about the way that Gyllenhaal's character is written is that he approaches fights, at least the initial fight with all the bikers, the way the Reacher character does. It's like telling them, you know, this is a bad idea, and I'm going to do all this.
Yeah.
And he ends up driving them to the hospital. Right. I did like that part.
Well, and there was something about the chemistry between the original Patrick Swayze and Kelly Lynch. I mean, it seems like an improbable duo, and that just works so much better. And I'm not sure that that's the focal point of either of these movies.
Everyone remembers Roadhouse for the romance.
Right, yeah. Exactly. But I don't know. That worked
much better
for me. You'd
be silly not to remember Kelly Lynch. Come on. No, it's true.
And again, if you haven't seen the 89 Roadhouse in a while, it is so fun and so dumb.
It has my daughter's stamp of approval.
Yeah, it's just a wonderfully zany film. And again, I just want to say the name Rowdy Harrington one more time.
And that was our discussion of the new Roadhouse, directed by Doug Liman. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts at Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss Love Lies Bleeding. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Ann Webster. During the first half of the show, Mary Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I talked about Doug Liman's Roadhouse remake for Amazon Prime. Let's now move to something that is another study in contemporary violence, as is evident in its title, Love Lies Bleeding. It's not as if the genre of film noir has ever truly faded away, what with the likes of Quentin Tarantino and others. It has evolved with the times, and that trend continues now with what Rose Glass, director and co-writer with Veronica Tofilska, has given us. Of course, Glass benefits from the presence of Kristen Stewart, who, having evolved from her twilight years into an art film stalwart, offers her own brand of smoldering screen presence. But Glass uses that presence to buoy a script that is a kind of lesbian neo-noir marked both by anti-drug messaging and a bit of near-comic magical realism. Stewart plays Lou, the manager of a rundown gym who becomes involved with the bodybuilder Jackie, played by the muscular Katie O'Brien. The two engage in some fairly graphic sex scenes until Lou's family issues conflict with Jackie's steroid-laced obsession to compete in a Las Vegas bodybuilding competition. Like all noirs, violence ensues, some of it even more graphic than the sex scenes. But as is the case with many more recent noirs, the ending, and what it's supposed to mean, remains open, just as the reactions of many viewers might be as well.
I think one of the problems, from my perspective, about Love Lies Bleeding, there's too much going on and too little going on at the same time, if that makes sense, and I'll try to explain a little bit more. I think that we get some insight into Lou and who she is. And, you know, she's the sort of savior of everyone, you know, so she has to protect her sister, who's an almost unrecognizable Jenna Malone, from her husband, Dave Franco, because he is abusive and repeatedly abusive in a way that's very difficult to watch. And so she has to sort of try to save her repeatedly. And then she meets Jackie, and there's an element of trying to save her. And then she's trying to save this gym, and she's trying to do all of these things sort of at one time. But really, to what end? Is it because she's damaged? We find out about her dad, played by, and again, almost unrecognizable Ed Harris.
Who's wearing the worst wig in the world.
Yes, but. And so we find out maybe why she came to be how she is, trying to fix everything for everyone. But there were things about this movie that I probably didn't understand fully. I did read that review by Daisy Jones in The Guardian, and I thought that one of the things that she said about this film that resonated for me, she said, this film felt like it was made for queers and not just about them. And I think that part of the problem, when we've seen other films recently that have lesbian protagonists, most notably Bottoms and Drive Away Dolls, but those were comedies. And then we have a whole series of films that are serious and you know, sort of heavy that involve lesbians. And this was a departure from that. But I have to say, the sex scenes in this film that are very graphic, and we have sort of repeated variations on them, there was something about them that I found to be really off-putting in a way that I haven't found other films with either gay or lesbian protagonists. So am I missing something? Is this a commentary on male violence, for example? Because I think that was certainly an underlying theme. Is this sort of a commentary on a particular lesbian subculture?
I mean, I think you are supposed to be put off by a lot of the things in Love Lies Bleeding. I mean, the fact that there is more than a strain of sadomasochism running through this relationship, there's this idea that both of them are attracted to pain in some way, or maybe have a higher tolerance for pain than others. That certainly plays out through the movie. And I was also thinking of, you know, you mentioned some other films, but I was thinking of Bound by the Wachowskis, which not only was about, you know, two women in love, but also had this kind of twisted noir plot where people ended up dead and there was all of these secrets and things like that. And of course, you mentioned Driveway Dolls by Ethan Coen. I was thinking of Blood Simple by the Coen brothers. There's a lot in common here. And the movie Love Lies Bleeding, something we haven't mentioned is that it's set in 1989, the same year that Roadhouse came out, by the way, in New Mexico. And I think Rose Glass's sense of that place at that time is very palpable in the movie. And I really liked her debut feature, which was a religious horror movie called Saint Maud. This is her second film. And I think I'm kind of in the same camp as you, Mary Pat, on the sense that I'm still kind of grappling with my own feelings about this movie. I run really hot and cold on it because I think that Love Lies Bleeding is so brilliantly made and brilliantly acted, not only by Kristen Stewart, but Katie O'Brien, who I don't think I've seen in anything before.
No.
This is a commanding performance. This is one of those performances where you sit up and go, who is that?
Almost as good as Conor McGregor in Roadhouse.
Would you stop bringing up Conor McGregor? It's a really, really good nuanced performance. You know, she's like the shadowy hitchhiker who kind of, you know, rolls into town and all these problems start because of it, which is a classic noir thing. I think my problem, though, ultimately with Love Lies Bleeding is a thing that I think is also going to really enthuse a lot of people, which is that sort of metaphorical, magical realism thing that's going on here. And I don't want to spoil anything, but the way that that kind of rears its head in the third act felt almost like an escape hatch or something. Mm-hmm. It almost felt like Rose Glass didn't have the confidence in this material or in the story to just tell a story. It's so choked with metaphor, not only the sort of magical realism stuff that we're talking around, but like Ed Harris's bugs and that canyon in the middle of the desert that's filled with secrets and all of this stuff. And I think that all of the things that happen to these characters in the last half hour of this movie, they don't feel like they build from sort of the logic of the story, which is how a great noir plot unfolds. It just kind of felt like piling on, like one quote unquote shocking thing after another.
I really like the idea that you brought up Blood Simple, because everything that you're talking about works in Blood Simple.
Yes.
I mean, that is a really a terrific little neo-noir.
The chess pieces that move around in that movie.
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
But I don't think that that's exactly what she wanted to do. I'm much more in the Daisy Jones camp, that I think that she just was putting stuff on the screen to shock us and to have fun from the way that she was thinking about having fun. And I have to be the first to admit, this is not a movie that in any way was intent for an audience of me. I've seen so many different kinds of movies in my career that have not been for me, that I've appreciated. I didn't necessarily appreciate Love Lies Bleeding in the way that she wants me to, but I'm willing to admit that not being the target of that, I'm not meant to get it. And that's fine.
But this didn't make me rethink the whole thing. So some of these other movies, I mean, for example, Blue is the Warmest Color, and we know that the actresses who were in that movie protested that they had been taken advantage of by the director.
Yeah.
So then I was starting to wonder, well, am I looking at this as a straight older woman with the male gaze that is always so criticized, and this is trying to do something different? But let's face it,
we may be really overthinking this film.
Maybe it was just supposed to be fun.
Kind of like how we overthought Roadhouse in the first half of the show.
And how you underthought Conor McGregor.
Well, let me overthink it a little bit more, if I may, in talking about Love Lies Bleeding, because this is a very artful film.
And I thought the cinematography, some of the desert scenes were just
those
so
big
gorgeous.
Open skies. Like,
it made you want to move to Albuquerque.
I wouldn't go there.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
No offense to Albuquerque.
I like Albuquerque.
I was also thinking of an underseen film that I think is worth watching, which is Robert Towne's film Personal Best from the early
80s. Hemingway.
Yeah. Because that's about two women in love. They're both athletes, but it's also a movie, and Love Lies Bleeding is similar. It's a movie about bodies. In this case, there's a lot of dead bodies in Love Lies Bleeding, and there's lots of sex going on. But it's also about people pushing their bodies the nth degree. And how far can I push my body? And
destiny
is
a decision.
And it's about
the signs in
the quote-unquote motivational signs. And just like the close-ups, especially on Katie O'Brien's body as she is injecting herself with steroids. And we see these twisting muscles and sweat, and there's blood. And so I think that this movie does have that kind of visceral feeling about it, where it's a movie about people undergoing physical strain, and the movie kind of tries to put you
and
through
then,
a similar
and
strain.
And then we're
to
trying
me, though,
to figure
I think
out
it is
to what
overworked.
End.
I think it's right. overworked. I think those shocking things that you talked about, they're either going to work for you and you're going to go along with it, or like me, I felt like it was provocation and little else.
And we did talk a little bit about the performances, but I did want to give a shout out to Anna Baryshnikov, because the character who she plays, she's this sort of needy, clingy, and then
she's following Kristen Stewart
around. And then the plot sort of revolves around her ultimately. But I really did like her performance.
Yeah. And again, I just want to say the name Katie O'Brien one more time. I mean, she is supposed to be this person that basically captivates Kristen Stewart to the point that Kristen Stewart will do just about anything. And that's a tough kind of role to pull off. And I think she pulls it off. You understand why this relationship would go the way that it does because of her acting.
The last thing I want to say is with Love Lies Bleeding, take that title literally, because there is some graphic violence in the film. At any rate, that was our discussion of Rose Glass's neo-noir Love Lies Bleeding, and this is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and early in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Roadhouse. Let's take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week. Same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer, wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the late, great Stanley Kubrick. Sanitized violence in movies has been accepted for years. What seems to upset everybody now is the showing of the consequences of violence. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.